And then after we made the second restaurant venture pay off, mm-hmm. Family got back on its feet. Mm-hmm. Then we looked for a bigger, nicer place. Mm-hmm. And my mother and I found a large house in the Highland Park area. And we still have it. Brother and sister still own it. It's a large 10-room colonial, mm-hmm. two-story house on a large piece of ground. And for many years, I kept it really shined up and was quite a landmark there.
Now, were there other Chinese families living around the City Market area?
Yes,
when you were,
yes. Yeah. Around the City Market, starting from 9th Street, 9th Place, 10th, all the way to 12th, mm-hmm. Pico, those several streets in there, and all the way from San Pedro Street to Central Avenue, that mm-hmm. 1 square mile, I guess, would approximate it, predominantly Chinese.
And this was during
It was a Chinese congregational church there that served
that
the
right?
Served that community.
Uh-huh.
And then there were two or three restaurants there. One of the first ones was, the names have changed. The New Moon came later, On Luck mm-hmm. came later. Man Phuc Lao was mm-hmm. one of the early ones there.
And it's still there?
Yes, they've enlarged.
How about the grocery stores? Were there Chinese grocery stores there then?
Wing Chung Long was one of the more popular Chinese markets in Chinatown on Alameda Street. But then when it came time to clear out that whole area for the Union Depot, Wing Chung Long moved down to San Pedro Street.
I see.
And had those buildings remodeled for them and additions made mm-hmm. and so forth.
So the Chinese were living down in that area prior to the Union Station?
Well, I would say the biggest concentration of Chinese outside of Chinatown itself mm-hmm. would be around the City Market.
And then where were the schools located? Where did you attend grammar school?
Oh, I attended grammar school at 9th Street School. And many of our Chinese citizens, children of those of that era mm-hmm. went to Chinese school. And we honored Carolyn Chan.
Yes.
She was a teacher there. I didn't have Carolyn Chan. I think she came along a little bit after I left 9th Street School, but both my brothers and sisters all went to 9th Street School.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the other mm-hmm. population like, in school? It was...
At 9th Street School?
Uh-huh. What percent?
Well, if you remember, when I interviewed Carolyn, I don't think she told it on the stand,
mm-hmm.
but she said she had in her classes Chinese,
mm-hmm.
she had Mexican, she had Gypsy, even. I was quite surprised, Gypsy. And Irish. And
mm-hmm.
Pretty good mixture of, pretty good cross-section.
Do you know what percentage was Chinese? Did you have any
Only from recollection, no. Like in a classroom of, 30 students, there would be 5 or 6. Not much more than that. During my years there. I think after that, the Chinese percentage increased, and then and still later it would be quite heavy, Chinese in general. It was still pretty a good mixture of Anglos in there, and what I'm talking about is the 20s,
uh-huh.
early 20s,
uh-huh.
early 30s.
Now, when you tell us something about, when you were a little boy growing up, after you went to school,
mm.
then what did you do after that?
From 9th Street School, we went to a junior high school.
Oh, no, I meant when you were in grammar school. What was a typical day like, or a typical week like for you? Do you recall?
Well, we spent a lot of our hours studying Chinese while the other kids were playing ball. And it didn't go too good during those days, but today I look back and I say I'm very grateful that we were made to study some Chinese.
Your mother then after school would take you to church.
No, I studied at home.
Oh, you studied at home.
Yeah. Only after high school did I go.
Oh, I see. And did you have any...
She even had some students that came to our house.
I see. Mm-hmm. Then how about playmates? Do you recall any of your playmates at the street school?
Well, one of my closer friends during, they went from grade school to junior high school with an Armenian boy,
mm-hmm.
who now has a very busy little TV and radio shop, and I still see him once in a while.
So you didn't just have...
And Japanese. Invariably Chinese and Japanese became very good friends. You know, my sister had Japanese girlfriends,
uh-huh.
and I had Japanese boys that... they would come to our house after school and
uh-huh.
play together. And then in college, one of my closest friends was a Japanese fellow. We'd go to some of the dances where Chinese and Japanese both.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to do some sketching and we'd go out together.
Uh-huh.
We played tennis.
Uh-huh.
That was the only sport that I could make out in. I wasn't any good at baseball or ball or basketball or anything else. Tennis, I managed to, just because of my lankiness or speed, it was.
Now, how about, what junior high school did you attend?
It was called Lafayette Junior High School.
And was that
And that was east of Central Avenue and... at 14th Street, and it got the element changed in the succeeding years, and got quite black.
Mm-hmm. But when you were attending it, what was it like?
It was a nice school, and there wasn't. We had a nice cross section of people. I can't think of the blonde that later made it in the movie. She was in our junior high school. And when I went to Lincoln, Robert Young was at Lincoln. He's played in all the school plays.
Uh-huh.
And the girl that played opposite him is still married to him. That's one of the successful marriages of Hollywood, Robert Young and his wife.
That's very interesting.
Marie Wilson was the girl that went to junior high school.
Uh-huh.
She was a good, was a cute blonde,
uh-huh.
and very accomplished. She danced and sang, and she played in the school plays. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, she went to Hollywood. And she was during the 40s. She was blackouts of 40.
Mm-hmm.
She was a star in that stage play called The Blackout. Marie Wilson.
I see. So did any of your, how about any of your classmates after return home with you after school, or did you go to other people's homes to visit?
Seems like some of them would come to my home. I don't think I was encouraged to go to other homes so much. I don't know, my family tradition is pretty, we had chores to do.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have a lot of time to kill, because each one of us had, you know, were assigned certain duties to perform.
And who assigned it? Your
mother.
Your mother assigned
yeah.
it? How about weekends?
Oh, we also had the boys had to, at least my older brother and myself, had to help out in the produce business when we were in the produce business.
Would this be after school, or when did this take place?
For me, it was after school for, say, a couple of hours, and that was, see, you'd you'd buy the produce, like let's say it was lug boxes of fruit, and say they're peaches or apples or whatever. Well, you sort of dress them up, and you put the best ones on top, and you dress it up to look nice so that next morning when the buyers come, they go through the stack. And if you didn't kind of dress them up a little bit, they just didn't have the appeal. And my older brother had it quite difficult. He would have to go in the morning and work 2 or 3 hours before going to school. See, the produce market in those days would start about 1 o'clock in the morning.
So when did your brother get there?
Well, he didn't have to go. My father would go out first, and they hired help.
Uh-huh.
They'd start opening the stall at about 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then my older brother did put in maybe 2 hours or 2.5 hours before going off to school. He'd come home for breakfast and go off to school. And then in the afternoon, sometimes he'd have to put in an hour. He had quite a hard time. And being the older one, responsibility was always heavy.
Were you ever paid, or did your, parents?
Well, our system was always this way, even later when we worked in the restaurant. All our needs were looked after, whatever we needed for tuition or books or clothing or lunch money, music lessons, whatever, car expenses, whatever you needed, you were given that to you, but we were always trained to turn the money in that we made back into the family pot.
Even the tips you made?
Even the tips. And then from that, my mother would say, well, you need this for this week portion. The first money I ever made, we were expected to turn it into the family. It was my first job. I think the first $200 I ever got, I gave it to my folks. I had a $200 prize money from a piece of sculpture that I did that went out to the county fair. And that was the first $200 money that I ever received. And she was very proud that I had turned it on.
You didn't.
But we were never denied anything, whatever the family could afford. We were always, we didn't have the best in town, but we always were comfortable.
And then how about weekends? What did you do on weekends?
Well, once we got into the restaurant business, that took care of the weekends.
What did you do before you went into the restaurant business?
I can remember family picnics. Occasionally, we would manage a picnic, and I don't recall it. It was how we managed it, that Sunday service in the middle of the day. I think occasionally we'd go and get back by 2 o'clock or leave after church.
Where would picnics
well? I think we bought our first car in the early 20s. It might have been 1920.
Mm-hmm.
First car I remember, and it was a touring car, with a soft top. And the brand name was Oberlin. Never heard of such a thing, did you? And then I think the first sedan we bought was in the 30s.
Uh-huh.
First cars were touring cars. Model T's were soft top. You really had to be somebody to own an enclosed car with roll-up glass. That was something special.
Were you one of the first families to own a car?
Well, there weren't that many families in those days,
How many about?
This is the end of the duplicate of Tape 1, Side 1 of the interview with Gilbert Leung.